This edition of Culture with Robert Bound was first broadcast on the 22nd of October 2012 on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to the 54th edition of Culture with me, Robert Bounds. This week's show is a treasure trove of colourful treats for you. A round the world ticket on the Culture Express, so grab your boarding card and hop on board. First up, we head to the CMJ Music Marathon in New York City to talk music business.
It's one of those festivals where especially if you're a new band or a smaller band, and you come up here and play a lot of shows and get in front of a lot of people, it can be huge for you.
We also meet the Cape Town scholar who's given himself the impressive task of translating Homer's Iliad into South African English.
The Greek of the Iliad itself is a mixed language. It's a kind of poetic dialect created out of various Greek dialects. So to translate it by a mixed form of English is actually reasonably appropriate.
And we'll visit one of Berlin's most bizarre museums, the Design Panopticum.
I rescue here real functional things, but this thing looks like science fiction thing.
Plus, we'll enjoy a live session from Oslo trio Philco Fiction. We'll revive our Round the World independent record shop tour with a trip to Materia Prima in Lisbon. And we'll find out what's been going on at the São Paulo Art Biennale. That's all coming up here on Culture with me, Robert Bounds, on Monocle 24. So first up, it's time to hear some of those Nordic melodies from our Oslo pals Philco Fiction. The trio stopped by Midori House for a session, and here's their track, Help.
I don't know what you hide, but you can't hide it no more, no more, no, 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 no more. No more. I don't know why you hide, but soon you can hide yourself from me. No, 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 no.
Oh,
Thank you. Thank you so much.
That was Philco Fiction with help from their debut LP, Take It Personal. There'll be a bit more from their Midori House session later on in the show. The annual CMJ Music Marathon in New York has established itself as one of the world's first ports of call for industry insiders and music fans looking to scout out the next act who'll be taking the music industry by storm. Over 1,300 performances take place across the city alongside panel discussions exploring the current climate of the music industry, from streaming and copyright to artist management and production. It's the place where the cool cats come to see and be seen. This year's event took place last week, and we sent Barrett Austin from our New York bureau down the road to see what was on offer this year.
Each year in October, the CMJ Showcase and Conference comes to New York for one of the most important scouting acts in the music business. This year, more than 80 venues, both big and small, played host to hundreds of performances over 5 nights. And while the Showcase offers New Yorkers a glimpse of bands they may have never heard of, CMJ is serious business for industry professionals. Among those in attendance this year was Shil Patel, a radio promoter for Georgia-based Team Claremont.
We've been officially under the name Team Claremont since 1997. We just had our 15th anniversary at the end of July. And we have two different divisions. We have a radio promotion department and a PR department. And we've been doing radio promotion for the entirety of our existence. And we specialize in college radio, and in particular, like stations that are reporters to CMJ. And then we also promote to alternative specialty radio stations, AAA radio, so kind of a wide gamut of radio.
Tell me a little bit about the official showcase that you guys are promoting tonight.
Yeah, we've, for the past few years, been putting together an official showcase with CMJ. It was one of those things where it just made sense to us to do an official showcase and to get our artists. We used to do day parties, and we felt like a lot of the artists that we work with don't necessarily, you know, have a showcase set up for them, so we decided the artists that we work with, if we can, you know, we'll put together something official for them, because there's all kinds of day parties and stuff, but there's something different about having like an official officially sanctioned showcase. So it came together several weeks ago. The headliner is Matthew E. White who's from Richmond, Virginia, and he's on a label on kind of co-released his new album called Big Inner. There's two labels, Space Bomb and Home Tapes, and Opossum, who are on Fire Records, a great band from Athens. We have three bands from Athens where we're based, and that's always something we try to do, is have bands from our hometown on the lineup. So Twin Tigers are on the lineup, Grape Soda, who are on Kindercore Records, and a band called Coco Beware, who self-released their first album over the summer. It's great for us to be able to have bands from New Zealand, from Virginia, from Athens, representing, you know, us as a company. So.
And to sort of follow off of that, the idea of diversity in the bands that you've chosen, there's a huge range of sound from what I've heard from the various bands on Showcase. But tell me a little bit about the sound of some of the bands that we'll hear here tonight.
Matthew E. White, his sound has been compared a lot to like Randy Newman, and artists like that. But it's a lot more than that. He's synthesizing a lot of stuff. He's a really great composer and arranger, so he's got a horn section, and his horn section is actually playing with the Mountain Goats. He's touring with them currently, and he arranged the horn parts for the Mountain Goats, and it's a really, really incredible sound live, really vast sounding. Then there's Possum, who, you know, are more of like I guess you could call it like a psychedelic sound. And it's a three-piece band from New Zealand. And Grape Soda, they're two brothers, and it's like a farfisa and drum duo. And it's really awesome. At times, it kind of draws on reggae, and they also are really influenced by bands like the Monks and Shangri-Las.
How important has CMJ become for the music industry in this country, particularly for up-and-coming musicians?
It's one of those festivals where especially if you're a new band or a smaller band. And you come up here and play a lot of shows and get in front of a lot of people, it can be huge for you. You know, there's obviously artists that have come out and performed at CMJ that have had terrible horror stories about, you know, playing to no one in Brooklyn or in Lower East Side. But there's also the idea of you're in one of the epicenters of music, you know, in America, and there have definitely been showcases that we've put on and showcases I've been at where bands have been signed to labels or have gotten booking agents or even just made connections with college radio stations. It's one of those things where it might be a small thing, but it's an important thing.
Your eyes make peace like a river, and your eyes make a love like an ocean. I can never look away. Oh, baby, I can never look away.
While CMJ presents big opportunities for industry insiders, it's perhaps the musicians themselves who have the most to gain from a good run at CMJ. A good performance in front of the right audience at conferences like this can often mean a breakout for top acts. One of this year's most talented performers was Virginia-born Matthew E. White. White's vintage breed of rock has won fans across the country, with Rolling Stone recently naming him one of the top acts to watch. Here's White on his experience at this year's show.
As far as CMJ is concerned, just practically, this show kind of got thrown on at the end, and I mean, that was really exciting, you know, because my whole focus has been on a 45-minute set opening for the Mountain Goats. Like, what is that like? And opening for someone, especially someone who has, like, a rabid fan base like they do, is a challenge in itself. And the CMJ part of this sort of opens that experience up a little bit for the band, where there's an opportunity for maybe folks that had heard of my record to get into all these shows that, like, the Mountain Goats shows are all sold out, you know, with Mountain Goats fans. So that's been really fun. You know, last night we played a CMJ show at the Bowery, and that was exciting. I mean, that was a much more, there were just people there to see us, you know, which was great. And I'm hopefully this show will be the same to some extent. And it's been fun. I've never played CMJ before, and it was kind of a nice cherry on top of the whole tour at the last second to get this show.
For Monocle, in New York, I'm Barrett Austin.
You're listening to Culture on Monocle 24. After this short break, we'll be heading to São Paulo. See you there.
Second Cycle is a special kind of upscaling that understands consumers' connection to objects with a personal history. Monocle Films traveled to Helsinki to watch Finnish furniture brand Artek hunt down old items and bring them back to life.
It was quite an emotional thing for all of us. When we went through the flea markets and schools and kindergarten from where we bought these things, we took them to our office and our employees started to say that Mirko, don't do anything to them. Don't touch them, don't hurt them. Let them be as they are.
You can watch this Second Cycle film and many more films in the program's menu on monocle.com.
For those just joining us, you're listening to Culture with me, Robert Bound. As fans of Monocle 24 will know, Free's madness has passed through London, FIEC has just drawn to a close in Paris, and a few weeks ago over in Latin America, Art Rio took place for the second time since its birth in 2009. But while art fairs come and go in the blink of an eye, on the other side of Brazil, the 30th São Paulo Art Biennale, which also kicked off in September, is quietly still underway. This year, the curators decided to do something different. The Biennale decided to ignore its usual route of a theme and paintings on the wall, and it's making for more interactive art that can be found at locations throughout the city. Monocle reporter Sheena Rossiter has seen the 30th Biennale and spoke with some of the artists and curators behind this year's event.
Just weeks into Sao Paulo's 30th Art Biennial, crowds of paulistanos have already shuffled in to catch a glimpse and interact with the over 3,000 pieces of art created by 111 artists. Clustered at various venues throughout the sprawling metropolis, curators have decided to scrap the idea of using a theme this year and instead have a motif, the imminence of poetics. Toby Mayer, the associate curator of Sao Paulo's 30th Biennial, tells more.
There is a very clear sort of narrative in this biennial. We have been not thinking along linearity, but in constellative processes, which means if you have the chance to visit the biennial here in the pavilion, you will realize certain clusters of works of artists that dialogue with each other, but also have the chance to present larger bodies of works, not only one piece or one film. in the show. And then, of course, there's also a constellation that we put over the city, meaning from departing from the Biennial Pavilion here in Ibirapuera Park, there are different locations spread throughout the city where we gave artists the chance to work with a very particular context. Museum collections or historical architectures that provide a possibility for the artists to work in a very particular geographic or historical context. And that has been also very challenging and satisfying for all parts involved, I must say.
There's a good taste for Latin America at Sao Paulo's Art Biennial, with about 45% of the artists being from the region. But there's still a wide representation of artists from everywhere, from Germany to Japan to even Turkey. And after traveling around the globe, the curatorial team selected more interactive artists, like Sheila Hicks, a world-renowned textile artist who is originally from the United States but is now living in Paris. Her work allows visitors to touch and feel unique textures and fibers used in her art. Toby Meyer tells us more about some artists who bring interactivity to this year's Sao Paulo Biennial.
We have different projects that are works where you can participate or which have a performative aspect to it, such as Simone Forti's work or Franz Erhard Walter's work, but also Sergei Cherepnin and Ayar Akava at the Casa Modernista, where the viewer or the visitor really has the possibility to activate those pieces. And I think that is very important to mention alongside the program that we have been working on for the biennial, meaning performances, talks and events which are taking place at different venues throughout the city, and the mobile radio project, which I think is also a participatory piece alongside a sound piece, and a work that gives voice to many creative people in the city that otherwise do not have access to the airwaves. And finally, I would also like to mention the Swedish poetry and literature journal OEI, which have also arrived here on Friday last week and will be in residency for the next 3.5 months, working alongside us on issue number 59 of the journal that will accompany the exhibition beyond its curatorial kernel.
On the radio sessions, transmitting live from the mobile radio studio at the 30th Sao Paulo Biennial.
One of the most interesting and interactive art forms coming out of the biennial makes art gallery goers not even have to leave their own homes. Mobile radio has gathered people from all walks of life in Brazil's biggest city as a way of making art, as one of the project's founders, Knud Offerman, explains.
It's a very open radio station that deals with questions of art and with the artistic use of radio. So the idea is not that we will just be talking about art, but the idea is that we use radio creatively as a medium. I don't know, maybe some of your listeners who are based in London know the radio station Resonance 104.4 FM. This is where we originated as a group, and it's kind of one of the references that we have for making radio.
He tells about what listeners can expect to hear coming from the Sao Paulo studio.
We will present a huge amount of radio art that has been produced over the last years, a lot of it from Europe, Northern America, the Antipodean. But we will also present a lot of live programming, which happens in our studio here at the Biennial, and which will be done by local artists. Some of them are part of the Biennial, but most of them are actually sound artists, musicians, composers, writers, philosophers, DJs, all sorts of people that we have met here and whom we've offered airtime to come in and do shows live. We've asked around, we've done some presentations, we've got a huge amount of feedback from people who really had creative ideas of what they wanted to do. We haven't had a single person who came and said, I want to play my favorite records. We've really had a lot of great, great proposals.
But housing all these art projects to interact with one another was no easy feat. Housed in a uniquely shaped design with rounded corners that twist and turn, appearing to look like frozen waves holding an artwork. It's complemented by Oscar Niehemeyer's modernist architecture in the Biennale building itself, with his use of straight lines and futuristic feel. The architect behind the exhibition design, Martin Corleone, says he came up with the design so the projects from each artist could connect with one another.
We worked a lot in making connections between the artists and in establishing the kind of connection, if it's visual or by memory. And then we try to make like a balance between enclosed space and more open spaces to have like a complexity and a variety of spaces, and each one trying to get the best way of showing the work. So it's like you'll be able to see a lot of connections between artists and how the works relate. And also you can see not to just one work for each artist, but kind of collection of works that represents the work of this artist. So have many levels of reading. You can see like you can understand the poetic of the artist, but also you connect the poetic with the other artists. So I think the goal, and we hope we achieve that, is that you can see this kind of complexity and connections between artists.
And to him, not only is this biennial different for its interactivity, but local Brazilian artists are also recognizing their local influence in this growing market.
The market is strong in Brazil, and I think it contributes to have more and more young artists working very well in a very high level. But also it's nice because we can have like younger generations that are referred to our own history in art, because we have like a tradition in art for the last century. So it starts to have like young artists who refer to ourselves instead of the United States of the Europe. So this is kind of a new thing for us, and it's very interesting to see it.
Running until December 9th, the 30th Art Biennial here in Sao Paulo is expected to draw around 60,000 visitors, some of whom are expected to be repeat visitors experiencing, yet again, the interactive art experience. For Monocle, in Sao Paulo, I'm Sheena Rossiter.
And the Sao Paulo Biennale is on until the 9th of December. You are tuned into Culture with me, Robert Bounds, on Monocle 24. Still to come in part two, we'll hear some more from those Nordic geniuses, Vilko Fiction. We'll meet the man who's translating one of the canons of literature into South African English. We'll visit one of Lisbon's independent musical stores and explore Berlin's most bizarre museum space. It's a veritable feast. Well, we do like a good bit of dark Nordic pop here on Culture, so here's another track from Vilko Fiction's Midori House session. This is Horizon.
So, so real, too young to feel. Music like you wear your skin. Easy is dead, no, I know easy hits you like a summer with no heat. Don't you know your style makes me move to a new sound. I care about your cool, care about your honesty, old school. Old school.
That was Philco Fiction performing Horizon, and not content with just listening to their songs, we also wanted to ask the trio a few questions too. We always hear that, you know, the way to make music for a band, especially if you play live, is to have like an amazing kind of amount of merchandise. You've got to have your t-shirt, you've got to have like, you know, a watch with all your faces on it.
Yeah.
Who'd be where? I think 1 o'clock, 9 o'clock, 3 o'clock.
Probably.
No, all your faces. You need another, you need one more person on there as well.
Good I think idea. We're going for diapers actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
Coffee filters
and diapers.
I like that. Philco Fiction diapers. You heard it here first. You need to trademark that before someone snaps that up.
Yeah.
But where would you want to? Where's your ideal festival to sort of play at? Other than see all the other acts, where would you like to travel? Where do you think's got great crowds, or where just interests you?
So yeah, so those big festivals you hear about.
Mm. We're kind of excited about the festival we're going to at Iceland.
Yeah,
Iceland really.
Airwaves.
Yeah.
Is this the one that is like, because it's always light? Is it this one that lasts all night?
No, it's not. It's in November, so it's
dark. Shame. What a terrible question I asked. You could have winked when I said that and go, no, Rob, it's not that one.
Yeah, but Norway, in Norway, there's a really great festival called Træna Festival, which is on an island. You have to take boat 3 hours off the coast in the northern part of Norway. And there's light.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
I think they should set up a sort of barge that goes by the passenger ferry, and then you get music played to you as you go across to the island. What about
with
that?
With your Philco Fiction diapers.
That'd be it. Philco Fiction diapers.
On the, yeah.
Philco Fiction ferry.
That's a plan.
Who named your band?
I think it was... collaboration between me and Bjarne, really.
We were Googling.
Yeah, it was a process.
Philco is sort of like an old-fashioned electronics make, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like shavers and stuff and things
and
like that.
And radios. Well,
the radios, that's right, Philco, yeah.
Mainly radios.
Okay. Philadelphia Radio Company or something.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
We used to have a company like that in England called Raycal. R-A-C-A-L, Raycal. It's like one of those old-fashioned things. And then I Googled that and I realised that the chap who set it up was basically called Ray and his wife was called Carol. Mm. Raycal.
Yeah, nice.
Do the math.
Yeah.
That was Turid, Bjarne and Andreas from Philco Fiction, and we'll hear another track from their session later on in the show. You're listening to Culture with me, Robert Bound. Words like braai, felt and lobola may not sound like English, but they figure in the 5,000-word Oxford Dictionary of South African English. And now they can also be found incorporated into a new translation of Homer's 3,000-year-old classical Greek epic, the Iliad. The epic poem tells the stories of two warriors, guided by immortal gods, who fought and died for the sake of the beautiful Helen of Troy. The Iliad and its companion, the Odyssey, have for centuries been obligatory reading for students of classics the world over. In an extraordinary labour of love, Richard Whittaker, Emeritus Professor of Classics at the University of Cape Town, spent 10 years translating the Iliad from ancient Greek into South African English. The translation, which runs to over 500 pages long, has just been published. Alex Deval Smith met him in Cape Town to find out what the new text looks and sounds like.
The Iliad is basically an epic poem involving gods and heroes. It's set at Troy, a town in what would now be northwest Turkey. And it talks about the siege of the town by a expeditionary force of Greeks, or Achaeans, as Homer calls them in his poem. It comes from an oral tradition that perhaps around 750 BC it found its way into writing, which has then come down through manuscripts and has been translated into English, into French, into German, to many world languages.
When you decided that you wanted to do a Southern African translation of a classic book, why this one?
There are a number of elements in the world that's described by Homer in the Iliad which can't but remind one of elements of Southern African culture. I mean, just to take one obvious example, the Achaeans, the Greeks, and the Trojans, their opponents, both count bride price. A bride is bought in cattle. Now, of course, that's something that's very familiar in Southern African society. What in Nguni languages, that is basically Xhosa and Zulu, is known as lobola. So why not use lobola rather than the rather clumsy bride price? There are obviously things such as the oral tradition, which was the background to the Iliad and which is still very strong in South Africa too, particularly the tradition of praise singing. There's a lovely phrase from a famous praise poet called Magolwana, who says, "People may die, but their praises remain. These remain and lament for them in the empty homes," which is very similar to Greek notions of praise as well. Homer compares the action of the heroes to forces of nature, like hurricanes or waves or fire, and particularly also to the actions of animals. So here, from Book 5 of the Iliad, the comparison is being made with Diomedes' actions. The words here, veld, which means open countryside, boma, meaning a protective bulwark or fence, kraals, the enclosures for animals. These are all words that occur in the passage. "As a lion that a shepherd in the veld wounds as it clears the boma, he does not kill it, but only makes its fury greater. Irresistible, it ranges through the kraals, panicking the sheep. Now their bodies lie heaped as the lion in its fury leaves the fold." So Diomedes raged against the Trojans.
Totally African, right?
Well, there are many elements, certainly, which I think would echo or resonate with an African audience.
Can you explain the process of translating? Do you go back to the original, or as far back as you can, to the Greek? Do you refer to other translations? How does it work?
I did work directly with the Greek text. I did refer sometimes to a rather archaic Victorian translation. So occasionally when I thought, oh, does it mean this or that, I would look at Butcher and Lang's 19th century translation of the poem. My language, in a sense, is a kind of created Southern African language, because assegai, for example, which comes up frequently in the poem, is not a Southern African word at all. It actually comes from North Africa. It's a Berber word like kraal, which seems so Southern African. It's actually Portuguese. It's the same word as coral. And so I use a range of words. I use a lot of Afrikaans words as well. Inspanning a team of oxen, that is, putting them in harness, outspanning them, taking them out of harness. So my language is a kind of mixed one, with words from Sotho and Xhosa and Zulu and Afrikaans, and then these borrowings which have come into Southern Africa from elsewhere. And in that respect, actually, the Greek of the Iliad itself is a mixed language. It's a kind of poetic dialect created out of various Greek dialects. So to translate it by a mixed form of English is actually reasonably appropriate.
What kind of relationship did the Greeks have with their ancestors?
The heroes are like the ancestors. The Greeks thought of them as perfectly historical people. And the heroes of just as many African people. I remember traveling once in very rural Transkei, talking to a man there, and he could recite his ancestors back for many generations, whereas, you know, most people of European descent or Europeans can't get beyond their grandparents, or perhaps their great-grandparents, then they're stuck. And the Greeks, too, had this great interest in genealogy. In the reading that I will do in a little while, one will hear "son of Atreus" or "son of Peleus," and the audience immediately knows that the son of Atreus is the great hero Agamemnon, the son of Peleus is the hero Achilles, and so on. So This is where the greatest warrior among the Achaeans, Achilles, argues with his chief, Agamemnon, who's the kind of paramount chief of the Achaeans. And the old counselor, Nestor, he intervenes and tries to get them to make peace. So Nestor says, "And you, son of Peleus, don't quarrel with a chief, for a scepter-bearing chief has greater honor. His praises come from Zeus. You are stronger. Your mother was a goddess. But ruling over more men, he's more powerful. Son of Atreus, curb your anger. And I beg Achilles to let go his rage. He is still our great Achaean Boma in grim war."
If you look at South Africa today, but also other English-speaking African countries, does your initiative tell us that there's a need for Africans to take a look again at the classics and translate them into languages which are their vernacular?
Yes, I think so. The parallels between contemporary African experience and what is depicted in those classics, I mean, Homer's from almost 2,500 years ago, people can see. They can see the parallels with their own lives.
Are there some other works that you would consider to be particularly good candidates for translation?
From my own point of view, the obvious progression for me would be to go from the Iliad to the Odyssey, and I think I will perhaps from next year start that. I mean, it's quite a big commitment. This one took me almost a decade.
That was Richard Whittaker, head of classics at the University of Cape Town, talking to Monocle's Alex Duval Smith. Now, last week we hailed the return of Book Corner, and today it's time to revisit another feature that we've been missing a little. It's time to hear from an independent record store from a corner of the globe. We're off to Lisbon, where a small store in the city's Belo Alto district serves up unique dance, experimental and international releases to a discerning crowd. Even if you don't know where to start, Materia Prima's manager Hugo Oliveira will always help you find something to your taste. Reporter Simon Tarek went to hear about the business and sample some of its best stock.
When you enter the shop, on your right, you can find the experimental, the avant-garde, the pioneers, the DVDs, the special editions. Then you have the trunk records, the more obscure things, the electronics, the kind of records you can listen at home. On your right, you can find the horizontal dance. On your left, you have the vertical dance. Then you have the shelf with the African releases. The Jimmy Tanner things, the Antenna, John Mouse. It's more the indie shelf. And then we have another small place. Now it's being used for secondhand promotions. When we need it, we use this for small exhibitions, illustration, that kind of stuff. These are the colors of my life. Green. There are three or four labels that we really like. Editions Mago from Austria, Trunk Records from Johnny Trunk. Also, this wonderful releases, The Caretaker, Leyland Kirby, and the label History always flavor the winners. Dance music, personally, I like Compact. I know Compact now it's like the Madonna of house techno, but 10 years ago they had amazing releases. Then there are some friends, if we can call it, like Felix Kubin. We always have the Felix Kubin records. Raster Noten, Casta Nicolai. We change wine for records, you know. We invited them 10 years ago to play their first concerts at Portugal, at the shop. And then friends, they say, "You have to listen to this," and it's connections, you know, it makes sense. Every year, the releases and Portuguese artists have new things. We cannot talk of a scene. There is not a scene, unfortunately, probably in a few years. But every year, the releases are getting better. People are losing their fear of experimenting. And actually, fun Portuguese release, Calhau, beautiful release, silk screen, it's quite experimental, but I think that you can listen when you come home from work. with a glass of wine. Materia Prima is an associated label of Chronica Electronica. They involve artists from different backgrounds or people from different backgrounds. They can release sound experiments from that guy that it's an engineer, or from visual artists. You know, it's an exploratory label. That client that I really enjoy knows nothing and comes here and asks me 3 or 4 records. I always choose something from Trunk. Right now, it's that Bob Chance. It's broken. It's absolutely amazing. More ambient, Jürgen Müller, Science of the Sea. Then from the Vertical Dance, the new from Actress. It's really nice. And then our really bestseller. We are really excited with this release. It's the Angola soundtrack. It's not easy to find on the other shops here at Lisbon. To me, it's one of the great releases of last year, because we have this connection with Angola, Portugal, and Angola. Most of the things were only released on 7 inches, getting some dust. But yeah, there are these 4 or 5 records, first with Angola soundtrack, if I add it here, because it's universal. You have voice, you have rhythm, you have the best of Africa with the best of Europe, so it's a very complete edition. Our main customer is obviously the person who is very well informed. They already know by our website or newsletter and listen the record that they want. It's a very personal thing. They send me an email or they phone and say, "Ugo, just save this record for me. I will be there at the end of the day." And then we have the customers I really like are those that come in. They don't recognize a cover, a name, nothing. They come to me and say, "Look, I can't recognize a thing, but I really like music. Could you please give me 3 or 4 records so I can listen and perhaps buy those records?" We open at 2 o'clock, we close at 8 o'clock. If you want, you can spend all the day listening records. In the end, they always take something. It's really nice, and they live happy.
That was Hugo Oliveira from the Materia Prima record store in Lisbon. You're listening to Culture with me, Robert Bounds, on Monocle 24. Where next? Why, Berlin, of course.
For the latest Monocle news, previews of upcoming films, glimpses of the new issue, and the inside scoop on all our retail ventures and new products, you need to do one simple thing. Subscribe to the free Monocle Bulletin. Sign up now at monocle.com. Let's stay in touch.
Welcome back to Culture on Monocle 24. From eclectic music in Lisbon to a slightly bizarre collection in Berlin, the city has about 160 museums, from the state-sponsored monoliths to the slightly more obscure. The design panopticon contains more than 1,000 strange objects collected by Russian-born artist Vlad Korniev. Our reporter Nikki Ertz popped in to meet him for a guided tour.
It looks a little bit like Frankenstein's labor inside, but it is everything true industrial objects. I rescue here real functional things, but these things look like science fiction things.
Wait a minute, you say you rescue them. Yeah. Why do you use the word rescue?
Yeah, because nobody can make money with this object. This object goes into garbage.
Exactly, garbage. But that's not what it looks like. It's the strangest of places, filled with the weirdest objects Vlad Korniev either found on the street or on eBay.
I not only found these objects on the street, I pay money for this object. There is no, I look on the internet and by eBay and in other auctions, and I have this machine, this iron lung. I pay many thousand euro for this machine. It is not so that I found in the street everything. No? But the point is, for me, it is the same if I found on the street or if I pay money. Important is that I like this thing. And the form is for me interesting, and I see behind the form, I see the function, and that is the point.
The collection, which has more of a mad scientist's lab than of a museum, is displayed in 10 different rooms. There are about 1,000 objects, and to each and every one of them, there's a story.
And this here is like homage to Metropolis movie. In the middle, sitting the mechanical man. This man sitting in the ejection seat from England, from Martin Becker. This man is produced with parts from prosthetic legs, as it's two prosthetic legs, two prosthetic arms, and the head is the hair dryer. And he needs a soul, like in the movie from Fritz Lang in Metropolis. And the visitors can spend a little bit soul. If you go in this big bus, this is a medical bus, it stay like in, also in German, Hochkant, and you can go
upright, yeah.
Yeah, you can go inside, you can hear, no, that is big thing. And if you stay here, you can make a picture from you in this bus with nice reflex and background with a flash, and so you're symbolical, spending a little bit soul to this mechanical man.
Given a soul to a mechanical man, that's what I just did. And it's just one of the things you can do in this surreal museum. Vlad Korniev likes to play some kind of a quiz with his visitors, always tricking you into giving the wrong answer by giving you the best, worst ideas of other visitors.
This closet has so many wrong ideas. The best wrong ideas are many, like a time machine, like a freezing room for future.
Telephone booth.
And if I open the door, no, you can see this thing having many small hooks. Two switches for heating and for many air. So, and the first step is a dryer. You see, you know, you can dry different things. But now it's your part. What do you mean? What you can dry in this big closet?
I should have prepared myself better for this. Anything to do with food?
No, nothing. As many people say, it's for sausage, for fish, for whatever, for clothes. But this is small and long. It's like 3 meter high, have a window so high like your face. That is a point why many people thinking you must go inside and close the door and look in this window. But
you must be able to look inside and see whether it's ready.
And see it's ready or not. And this room give you many time answer to this question. If you see, I have here many film projectors, and this is a film dryer for 35 millimeter films, because after developing, it must be dried.
Right. I should have known. Let's do one more.
For example, this man was sitting inside. I said his name is Ken. That is a friend from Barbie. He is very big now. He's like a normal man. He's 1.80 meter long, and his weight is 100 kilogram. So he is very thick now because he have a holiday here. He is very thick and very flexible, and this was very important for his job. The question here is, which job have Ken before he coming to my museum? Mm. You have ideas?
Maybe, you know, not a crash test dummy?
Too stupid for this, because he have not a sensors, he is not a sensible. He is only heavy and flexible. And about his job, can explain a little bit his hands. That is black, but black not it is not dirty, it's black from fire. And if you think about fire, you think about firefighters. This is a firefighter training dummy.
The Historical Medical Museum of the Charité in Berlin has already offered Vlad money to have some of the valuable objects he has in his collection. But he likes to hold on to them, and he's not ready collecting strange objects.
I cannot steal. This is the point. How you can make your problem to your job. No? And I make my problem, I collected everything, I make this to my job, and I collect it every time. If I see the interesting things, I buy this, and I have many back rooms, and I have maybe more place for this museum. I have a cellar, but this is coming in next time, and I make it more interesting, the rooms, what I have now. No?
It's like an addiction, you're addicted.
Yeah, okay, that is the point. You can, you must make your addiction to your profession.
That was Vlad Korniev showing his design panopticum in Berlin to Nikki Ertz. And that's just about all we have time for this week. Next week, it's Halloween. Don't say I didn't warn you. You've been listening to Culture with me, Robert Bound. My producer was Katie Bilbur, who was ably assisted by the star that is Holly Fisher. And considering you're probably listening to this on the internet, you're probably a fan of electronic communication. If you want to contact Katie, she's kb@monocle.com and I'm rb@monocle.com. Drop us a line. Time for one final song this week from their Midori House session and debut LP, Take It Personal. This is Philco Fiction with Finally. Thank you for tuning in.
Finally need me. for a little while. So return to her. Your heart is colder than the winter of 81. My mind was made up in the winter of 82. Is you will finally need me, but only for a little while. So return to her. Your heart is colder than the winter of 81. My mind was made up in the winter of 82. I'm tired of it's winter, returning to you, returning to you. Your face is warmer than the sun will ever be. My mind's still made up in the winter of 83. I return to you.